This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. A very sports-oriented program today. Coming up, historian Tom Dietz tells us about the man who broke the color barrier in football more than 100 years ago at what was then called Western State Normal School. Sam Dunlap is now in Western Michigan University's Athletic Hall of Fame. But first,
a new football season comes with some changes for Western Michigan University, including, of course, a new head football coach. Tim Lester is leading the Broncos after P.J. Fleck left after four seasons for the University of Minnesota. One constant for 20 years now has been Western's athletic director, Kathy Beauregard. Thank you very much for being here.
It's a pleasure to be here and always a great day to be a Bronco.
We're also joined today by Patrick Nothaft of the Kalamazoo Gazette and Bill Broderick of the Battle Creek Inquirer.
Hey, nice to be here. Yeah.
And Bill, you have the first question for Kathy Beauregard.
We are coming off the kind of season that people kind of dream about for football for Western Michigan. Maybe the best season in any sport Western's ever had. Maybe the best series of time Western Michigan's ever had in anything in terms of being high profile and getting some notoriety. But so from an athletic standpoint, from your job standpoint, how do you use that momentum to the best advantage? I see more billboards around town. I see more marketing with the football team. And is it important to keep the momentum going throughout all this offseason? And how important is it to keep the momentum in terms of the game day experience when you guys get going in the season?
Well, it's very important. There is no doubt. I appreciate your compliments on our season last year. It really is and has been a dream come true to actually have visions that I've been with the athletic department for over 20 years and this institution for longer than that, and have one day really dreamt about the ability to be able to do what we did in football. So that dream doesn't stop. That vision doesn't stop. The momentum doesn't stop. Obviously, we do have a change in a coach and did have a succession plan in place, believed that with Coach Fleck's success that there was going to be a time when he would move on. And certainly after the opportunity to play in a New Year's level game, bowl game, you know, really topped that all off from all aspects. So even though it was a change, there was maybe a little momentum swing from individuals that were excited about that and others that were like, really, you're dealing with this. But in my head, we knew that we were much better off during the time under Coach Fleck and couldn't be more excited about looking and going to and talking to our homegrown Coach Tim Lester about the next opportunity.
Patrick.
All right. And yeah, it doesn't seem like there's any better way to follow up on that historic season than with a trip to the Coliseum. Obviously, Western Michigan is going to get a sizable check to make that trip. But could you talk about what a game like that means for the program and just for kind of the excitement and atmosphere surrounding the team this year?
Sure. I will tell you, it's interesting to listen to Coach Fleck's conversations to our team when we went to the Cotton Bowl to be able to play in the ATT stadium that doesn't get any better in the country. And the opportunity we had there, it's been great to listen to Coach Lester talk about the fact that, you know, you should not be nervous about this opportunity, the Coliseum, because you just came off of the best venue to play football probably in the country when we left the Cotton Bowl. So obviously the history that surrounds the Coliseum is one of the things that I think is most exciting to a lot of us and what's actually taken place in that venue. We are the first team in my checking of the history to play a Pac-12 team from the Mid-American Conference. It's just not a typical travel, you know, scenario for us. This was very unique with one of our alums reaching out to us and asking us to come and showcase the Broncos in his town, with that being Alec Gores, and the opportunity to play, no doubt, one of the best teams in the country, which we've never shied away from. We talk about playing the bigger, the best. And if you look back to our years, it's interesting to me. We were just talking about this yesterday. The year that we played Ohio State, we played Michigan State, we played Georgia Southern, it was a year that we played, every team we played had won a championship before that. And what that did for the team, preparing them for the next year, which was last year, is an incredible accomplishment and learned so much during that time.
Do you think you have the right balance of a schedule this year? I mean, look, you go to USC, you go to Michigan State, so there's a couple Power 5 teams, but you do get six home games. You also are going to have a couple of night games during the week, one of those against Central Michigan. All in all, does that work out to the sort of schedule that you would want to have in a year if you could design it? Of course, there's external factors, but if you could design it, is this the sort of schedule you'd want to have?
You know, the scheduling is one of those things that is, I'd like to say there's a true pattern to what you're able to do. Sometimes it's right place, right time. It happened to be that way last year. If we hadn't had the last play of the game called our way at Northwestern last year, we wouldn't have had the season that we had last year. Right. So it is incredible to also look at a little bit of luck and look at those things from all that aspect. Scheduling there, you try to have a science too. When we scheduled USC, we didn't know they were going to have the number one quarterback in the country right now. But that's okay. That's what it is. And we go out and we play with what we have and do that. Ideally, we hope to be able to be 6-6, six at home, six away. And you certainly know what we're going to have with the Mid-American Conference. The MAC, people either like or dislike the night game November. It's really set up. We were the first ones with ESPN to do that. We did look at the value of that media exposure, sometimes more so than what it's like to play Central Michigan on a midweek game. That's probably not my ideal choice from accessibility for everyone to be able to attend the game. But that's an ESPN choice that they know we're going to be in the running. We're going to be in there for the championship, expectations for that. Central Michigan, the same thing. And so that game was selected for that. We're scheduling, which some people don't necessarily realize, 4, 5, 6, 7 years out. So that's a part of the non-conference piece that you hope that you can put together so that you can have a year like we did. Sometimes you know you're going to not be able to do that every year. So the planning of that all happening in the fourth year of Coach Fleck was timing, hoping that that all fits together. And this year, knowing we were going to come back with two big games right away. But once we play them and get moving from that aspect, it'll be great to be home for our Communiversity game. And then certainly we do know that we do have midweek games this year, but we're certainly expecting all of the Broncos to continue to support our football program.
Bill.
Last year we sat in this room and we talked about playoff formats and Power 5 bowl games, and you know, it was kind of a fantasy world to think, well, Western Michigan might even be in that conversation at the end of the year. But then as it turned out, they have an undefeated Broncos team. And at that time, you're saying, wow, it would have been nice to be even included in the conversation of being in a playoff format. But a MAC school really doesn't have that realization of believing that they could be included or could be actually talked about. But if there's a 8-team playoff or expanded playoff and they want to include the schools from conferences like the MAC or like Western Michigan, then that might have changed. And has your attitude changed about that from last year to this year, considering the situation Western Michigan was in? And do you favor like the 4-team playoff, or do you favor an expansion of that?
No, actually, I am still in favor of the format that's taking place. You know, it was tough. I mean, we had to go through the season. Every single game mattered, and concentrate on each game at a time, which is really difficult when people think it's, you know, really understanding the pressure when you're moving through an undefeated season is not easy as a coach and an administrative and staff and fans and all of those. And many times, as I said before, the right things have to happen, and you have to stay healthy, and you have to have a little bit of luck at sometimes late in the games, which we did from that aspect. Really, when they set this program up, and it's a college football playoff scenario, we knew that we were going to get one slot. That basically was done out of, you know, the legal antitrust scenario. It wasn't necessarily put together because they wanted to keep us in that mix, but they knew that they did.
One slot for a New Year's
bowl game. One slot for a New Year's bowl game.
So not the playoff.
Oh, no, I'm sorry.
Right, yeah.
Right, but that's, yeah, okay.
So well, that was great that Western got one of those slots, but they would never be in consideration of being a playoff.
Yeah. Right. Okay, yeah, you're right from that aspect. And maybe down the road there will be something from that aspect, but I will tell you right now, the way it's set up, and our goal was to definitely know that even though we were 13-0 going into that, that we were there, that we did execute to the best of our ability. We were the best of the non-autonomous five. And I honestly am honest and realistic enough and have been in the business long enough. That comes with a significant amount of dollars.
Patrick?
And it seems like if you want to raise your profile at the beginning of the season, which is important, I think, if you were trying to get into the discussion of where your team should be, say that it runs the table like it did last year. So could you talk a little bit about the importance of playing a team like USC and having a good showing in that game? And is scheduling an opponent like that going to be a priority going forward?
Absolutely. The one thing we do have to do, which is extremely true on this, is really line up your scheduling so that you'll still be in the conversation. And even though last year, I mean, it helped us with the wins over Northwestern, it helped us with the win over Illinois. They weren't ranked as high as they probably would have been from that aspect. We had to get through Toledo for the, you know, even for our own championship, because you have to win that to go on to the, you know, the championship game.
The MAC championship game.
Yeah, the MAC championship game. So in our scheduling, we've always attempted, and there will be more points moving forward and more votes moving forward, knowing what kind of schedule you actually play and show at that time. So we've probably been one of the more aggressive in the MAC to continue to do that with our scheduling. And I think, I mean, soon we'll be coming out with some more announcements that I think will be very exciting for our fans and trying to find that right balance. I mean, it's nice to think about. We know what a 13-0 team did. We know we could water the schedule down to make it 13-0 potentially again, even though our league schedule just gets, you know, it gets tougher every year and you just don't know who's going to be leading that. But in our strategy is that exactly. The one year that we ended up with a change, Ohio State actually, back when we played them a couple years ago, made a change of the team coming in because they need to play us and they need to play us in the MAC that they know are going to be at the top of the league.
How important when they're determining your strength of schedule is the intent of scheduling? Because, for instance, you played Michigan State a couple years when Michigan State had very good teams. We don't know how good Michigan State's going to be coming off a 3-9 season. But when you scheduled them, that was not a 3-9 team.
Yeah.
So, in other words, does that get factored in that even if Michigan State comes out this year and is not much better or, you know, is marginally better than they were last year, you still scheduled them at a time when you would have believed that Michigan State might be coming off, you know, a championship or a very strong season?
Well, if I had a little genie bottle that we could rub and know what's going to happen, with as many years out as you're going, it's tough to know. It's a big part of what we try to do. It's just one of those things, the game gets there and you end up playing, you're going to play who you play. And it may run into our favor. Really unique last year with Illinois. Illinois was supposed to be a home game. They came back to us and said, we don't want to come to you anymore. Will you look at coming to us? And this was a year and a half before they were supposed to come. Well, we were excited about having them in Kalamazoo, but we said, well, what's that going to take? And they said, well, I said, there's a $6,000 buy or $600,000 buyout. Sorry, I had trouble with my zeros there for a minute. And were they willing to do that? And it took like 2 seconds on the phone to say, yeah, we'll do that if you'll come to our place. And I said, well, it's not only that, but it's an $800,000 guarantee for us to come and play. So we made over $1.2 million in going to Illinois last year, playing that game.
And beating
them. With no expectation on their part of believing that we were going to come out with the W. We've had that go the other way, that Georgia Southern is in a league that we didn't believe was going to be half as good as they were. We went down there the first year and they smoked us. Then that was not in the cards. We didn't believe that. Brought them back here the next year and knew how good they really were. Played them, beat them, and they're not going to be on our schedule for the future for a while. So you just kind of learn through the process. But part of it is the relationships you build really with the different universities and coach Lester, we sit down and talk with the football coach. Sometimes it's not like the coach always totally agrees at what we end up doing, but we certainly want their influence along the way. And it's just a part of, you know, how it all works. A
couple quick things here. Hockey. It's coming up. This is going to be the fifth year of the National Collegiate Hockey Conference. So a couple things here. One, has it been a good fit for Western, as you had hoped? And second of all, with Notre Dame moving to the Big Ten, are you watching out for any sort of reshuffling of hockey conferences at this point?
The hockey conference situation, to be quite honest with you, when the Big Ten made the change to move out of the CCHA and the WCHA with their two schools, hit us drastically. There's no doubt about it. And we still feel our fans who still want to see many of those CCHA schools that we played here at Lawson. Some of them they're going to see coming back and getting back on the schedule that we didn't really have before. We've got Ferris back, which is always great competition for us and sellout all the time, even though they're in the WCHA. Bowling Green, we've gotten back into there like that because of our other, the Michigan thing's coming back. It's not this year, but it's going to happen. We played in the
Michigan State this year, right?
That's correct. Yep, that is. And we had to work with getting Michigan back on the schedule because we do have those that still want those games, and there's no reason we can't do those games. The entire hockey infrastructure of how the realignment happened, it didn't make a lot of sense because you have schools going across to other institutions to the west, other ones going east, different combinations of that. We were collaborating with Notre Dame, hoping that wherever they went, we would end up with two. And they were in the conversations with the league we're in and basically made that decision to go east. I think it makes total sense for them for a regional competition, which they were going east for everything. I think we always need to have our, you know, eyes open and our ears looking. There definitely is. We've been the best league in the conference. You look at where the national championships come. You look at even the last, gosh, what did we have? Six teams in the playoffs. And, you know, from an NCAA perspective, certainly are playing the best hockey possible.
And one other thing, 20 years ago this fall, Western Michigan University announced that Kathy Beauregard was going to become the new athletic director. Makes you the longest tenured AD in the MAC at this point. Still one of the very few women who is an athletic director at a Division I NCAA program. And also, you know, I think something else that's unusual is that you are someone who came from an Olympic sport as a coach. And we're seeing more, you know, people who come from outside coaching, even from the business world. Mark Hollis doesn't have a coaching background at Michigan State. Michigan's had a couple of non-coaching athletic directors. So I'm wondering what that does. Does that mean that there could be opportunities for more outside-the-box hires? Could that mean that there would be more opportunities for women down the road if they're not always looking at football coaches, which it seemed was sort of the pipeline to athletic director for a long time?
Well, thank you for being able to add up my years here, because there are times they go, I'm not sure how many that's actually been from that aspect. But, you know, my entire career has been here from coaching and then through the administrative role with, I believe this is my sixth president that I have had the opportunity to work with. We had several ADs before me and the chance to lead and do every day. I get up with as much excitement and enthusiasm and vision as I did 20 years ago to be able to do this job. And it's amazing over the time how we've grown, what we've been able to do there. The opportunities for women are still not where they should be from that aspect. You will find at universities across the country that sponsor non-football, but do Division I basketball. So an example like DePaul or some of those that are out there without football in particular, the numbers have increased for women. I have a dear friend, Jeannie Ponsetto, who is the AD at DePaul. She came up like me. She was a softball coach, basketball, I mean, and basically has been there similar to my time frame, but does not have football. So that's happening with more hires that way, which leads us all to believe that the hirings that are still being done with football, in some cases, they believe I coach football or the AD coaches football or can't figure out how to hire or do from that aspect. You know, it was interesting that there were three women out of, right now we're only talking about a maximum of nine that are at the level of at least FCS or FBS football programming. And three of us were really unbelievably in the New Year's playoff games last year. So it can happen. It should happen. There should be more. I just spoke in Kansas City to the most up-and-coming, most qualified group of women that are just waiting for their chance. So I hope it doesn't take us 20 more years, because when I was hired, the number was seven. So the increase there has not been at the level that we would like to see it, but continue to fight for that every single day and talk for it and be able to feel as if I'm contributing in some way. My dear friend that is now an alumnus, Zach Terrell, that I spent with yesterday, has a new name for me, which he used to kind of call me boss lady with Coach Fleck, kind of as a joke there. But he is calling me the pioneer now, which I take as really an honor of believing that, you know, we've been able to pave the way for others, I hope. But at the same time, I have felt that I basically, it's the student athlete that matters, male, female, sport. Being a coach, in my opinion, I believe helps me tremendously because I'm developing a team around me, whether it's our administrative team, it's our coaching team. I set it up almost like I coached. Strengths and weaknesses of different ones, extra talents in some areas is a critical part of what we do. And I do believe to some degree coaches have sat back and said to me, okay, well, you get it because you've been there.
Western Michigan University Athletic Director Kathy Beauregard, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Also want to thank Bill Broderick of the Battle Creek Inquirer.
Thanks for having me.
And Patrick Nothaft of the Kalamazoo Gazette.
Thanks, Gordon.
This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. From the upcoming sports season to some football history. In July, Western Michigan University honored the man who broke the color barrier on its football team over 100 years ago. Sam Dunlap was inducted into the Broncos Athletic Hall of Fame in 1973. Members of his family were on hand last month to remember Dunlap and his accomplishments. Historian Tom Dietz is the curator emeritus of the Kalamazoo Valley Museum and wrote about Dunlap back in 2003 for Michigan History Magazine. Thanks for being here, Tom.
Oh, my pleasure.
So let's start with how Sam Dunlap ended up at what was then called Western State Normal School.
The story, and this is not something I discovered on my own, I read it in some history, is that he was a standout star from Benton Harbor High School, that he was recruited by the University of Michigan, and that somewhere along the line between being recruited and actually showing up to take part with the football team at the University of Michigan, they discovered that he didn't fit their profile. That is to say, Sam was an African American. And at the time, the University of Michigan, especially its coach, the legendary, actually, for U of M, Fielding Yost, said, no, this isn't going to work. So Sam came back to Western Michigan, that is this part of the state. And Dwight Waldo, the then president of Western, was happy to welcome him. Waldo was a big, enthusiastic supporter of sports in general, and in particular, football. And so I think he was happy to have a standout star come to his football team, which was in the process of transitioning from a club sport to a intercollegiate sport such as football was in those days. So Sam ended up here and supported by Dwight Waldo.
And Sam Dunlap and Dwight Waldo really hit it off, didn't they?
That is a story that has always gone along, that whatever happened, that President Waldo supported Sam. There are a couple stories about that from his football career that I can touch on, but that the friendship also continued long after Sam had graduated and had moved on. But we know that in 1917, the team went to scheduled to play Culver Military Academy, and that Culver refused to play if they had to face an African-American. And Waldo told Dunlap, the decision is yours. If you want to go, we're going to support you. Sam eventually decided against it, let the team play, and they crushed Culver by a pretty substantial score, something like 79-0 or something like that. So they did hit it off.
There were some other examples of racism that Sam Dunlap faced, including from some of his own teammates every now and then.
This is true. We know. And here we should give some credit to the coach, Bill Spalding, at the time. At least one or two recruits to the Western team at the time were from some of the Southern states, and they refused to participate, play on a team with an African-American. And Spalding said, okay, that's it. You're gone. You will play with Sam. They also had to travel, and I think it was in 1916 that they were playing for the national championship, such as it was in those days, for normal schools. And Sam had to have separate accommodations along the way because well, that was the case for even professional sports into the 1950s and 60s, African-Americans were not always welcome at the same places. So Sam, they had to make special arrangements for him along the way.
Does the attitudes towards race at those times show up in some of the media coverage as well?
It's perhaps the case. What I've noticed, and I have read a number of the Western Heralds, the student newspaper from the day, that whenever he is referred to in the university media, normal school media at the time, that he is Sam, he is Dunlap, that he is the star fullback, or halfback rather, or the star punter, because he punted as well in those days. And later, though, in the 20s, and we can maybe guess but reasons with, you know, without proof, but they always referred to him as colored and black. And in the number of articles, I read a fair number of articles from 15, 16, 17. I never find Sam referred to as colored or black. He's always Sam, he is Dunlap. And I suspect this is because it's a smaller school in those days. Everybody knows each other. He's also the star, so you... But in the 20s, people may not have recognized him, and maybe this was the way of, you know, that guy who was the African-American star.
How good of an athlete was Sam Dunlap?
He appears to have been quite the athlete. He is, of course, in the Western Michigan Athletic Hall of Fame in a number of sports, baseball, track and field, as well as football. He set records that... And here is someone who knows Western sports history a little bit better than I, but I know that in the 1916 season, he scored something on the order of 19 touchdowns in a six-game season. I don't think anybody has at least touched that average of scoring, by rushing, that is, that anyone rushing has scored an average of 3 touchdowns plus per season, even in the 12-game season. I don't know that anybody scored 36 touchdowns. Some may have topped his 19, but the season's a lot longer. So he was very good that way. He was a punter. He was a runner. There is a story that in 1916, again, Notre Dame came to play Western. And even though Notre Dame won, led by George the Gipper, Gip.
George Gip, yeah.
They won 10-6. Sam was an excellent punter, did the scoring for Western, and Newt Rockne supposedly said, the legendary coach of the Irish, that he had never seen at that time a better punter than Sam. They played the University of Michigan at one time, and Fielding Yost was asked, well, why, even though the University of Michigan won, he was asked, well, why did you guys have much trouble slowing him down, stopping him? And he said, stopping him? We couldn't even slow him down.
Fielding Yost, who could have had some...
Who could have had him,
Sam,
yes.
Dunlap playing on his team, yeah, at one point.
Yeah.
So there is a year, in a little a break in there to his career, where he was away from football for a little bit. What was he doing?
Well, 1917 was the year the United States entered the First World War, marking that centennial this year, in fact. We entered the war in April. At some point after the 1917 football season, Sam enlisted in the Army, and he would serve the better part of 2 years and return for his final year as a student athlete in 1919 after missing the 1918 season. So Sam, you know, saw his duty and answered it to his country as well.
So what happened to Sam Dunlap after leaving Western Michigan Normal School?
He obviously was going to have some trouble finding a job as in athletics in those days. He was eventually recruited by to coach a team in West Virginia, the West Virginia Academy or Institute for Negro Students, to use in the terms of the day. And he coached there for a couple of years, their football team. After that, he apparently, and I'm not sure how it came about, but he ended up with working for a career for some time in New York City, working for one of the electric power companies, and then finally returned to Western and working at Western for the last several years of his life, mostly in the janitorial services here.
Historian Tom Dietz is the curator emeritus of the Kalamazoo Valley Museum. Thank you very much for your time.
Glad to be here. Thanks, Gordon.
Links with more about the story of Sam Dunlap and breaking football's color barrier in Kalamazoo can be found at wmuk.org. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.